All right, continuing on, just talking with Yao 2012 speakers. We're now with someone who knows a thing or two about Clojure and application security. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, my name is Aaron Bedra. I work for Groupon.
Cool. That's a pretty popular service these days.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you have a background and a specialty in application security. Can you dig into that a little bit?
So yeah, my day job at Groupon actually is software security, product security in general, kind of lead the team there.
Okay.
Really, it's kind of a combination of PCI compliance and fraud detection, making sure we're pushing out code that's safe. We have code that's on the web, on the mobile devices. So it's kind of a grab bag of stuff.
Sure. Now, what kind of, like, so in the web world, there's the script injects the cross-site scripting.
Yeah.
Or was it cross-site?
Yeah, cross-site scripting and.
Okay, and SQL injection.
Yep.
Then you have the client world where there's buffer overruns and.
Yep.
So what kind of like new security threats are there?
You know, if there's not many new things, it's really is a lot of rehashing the same ideas over and over again.
Okay.
The thing is, we tend to make new things, new frameworks, new ideas, and we kind of carry along the baggage of the past. We forget to, you know. Think about security a lot. So one of the things I actually try to do at Groupon is put security into the development process, right? It's part of the development lifecycle.
Okay.
So that we're thinking about it from the first time we start thinking about solving a problem.
Great.
It turns out that when you bake security in, it's a lot better than when you tack it on at the end.
Sure.
Less changes, it's more at the core values.
Cool. So that actually brings up an interesting point. Some of the themes that are going on at this particular event is the notion of continuous delivery and update things quickly and push things out as fast as you can, because customers at the end of the day are the ones that want to use updated software. How does that impact your, you know, the security world, right? So if I'm following Fred's model of just, you know, write something and throw it up there and see if it works and loosely couple it to everything else, how does security play into a model like that?
So I think it really is back to that starting to think about it from the ground up, right? Mm-hmm. If we have folks that understand the generic threats, what they are, what they mean, starting to build static analysis tools into your build process, right? Giving developers the tools to automate the basic security pieces means that you can sit back and focus on some of the bigger problems in security, like dealing with crypto and authentication and other things like that. Those are bigger problems to solve. But if you're talking about just continuously deploying, right? Mm-hmm. There is some risk there, but the reward is so great.
Sure.
And I think you really have to think about, you know, what the overall risk is, which is, I think, another conversation.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who make their careers on just risk alone.
Sure.
But you can dramatically reduce your risk when you build these tools and make it self-service.
Mm-hmm.
And also just make everybody aware, right? We built a grassroots program inside of Groupon where we have security reps from each team that come and the kind of champions for security on their team or their teams.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of pushed it out that way, and it's been very successful so far.
Excellent, man. Now, where does Clojure play into all this? Is it a programming language that you like, or you use it?
What? Clojure is a generic programming language, right? I use it a little bit at Groupon. We have other teams that also use it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I spend more of my time working on Clojure on other teams, and also kind of just training in general, using that more for other internal projects.
Okay.
To be honest, I think I've worked in C most of my time in the past probably almost a year, I guess, 6 months to a year.
Interesting.
Working on building some stuff into our web servers and different things for passive TCP fingerprinting and abuse detection and event correlation and those kind of things.
Great. So, and why do you use C?
It's a language the web server's built in. It was kind of the easy point to get in there. It's about speed, right?
Yeah.
I have given myself some SLAs. I don't want to impose overheads on our requests. These are inline type of activities.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that I'm, you know, in the millisecond, sub-millisecond category for making decisions so I don't affect the user experience.
Absolutely. Right on, man. So yeah, we've been having some really interesting conversations around performance and programming languages and native versus managed, and that conversation just never will go away, which is okay.
No. Clojure is a wonderful language for lots of things, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is that time when you really need that raw performance and also just interop with, you know, the web platform itself, right? It's written in C, and it's really the easiest place to inject.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about, for people out there who may not know Clojure very well, what is Clojure? It's a functional programming language?
Yeah, it's a Lisp dialect, runs in the JVM.
Okay.
There's also Clojure Script, which compiles to JavaScript.
Okay.
Clojure Script is more than that, though. It's kind of a Clojure enclosure where you can bring your own compiler. There's backends to Lua, to Objective-C, to Gambit Scheme, to Python. I don't know what else. There's other kind of goings on there, right? It's a really rich environment. But ClojureScript is really the targets of JavaScript as a project.
Okay. So what's interesting about Clojure?
There's some interesting pieces around immutability. The default choice of the language is be immutable. It actually solves removes a class of problems that would otherwise exist in traditional immutable languages. There's mutation present, right? But it's well controlled. You have to make decisions about mutation, and you have to think about it. It forces you to understand what you're doing and explicitly act in order to mutate.
Interesting. And mutate could mean something like do some I/O or like what?
It's really about changing values, right?
Okay.
Understanding, hey world, here is this thing. I'm going to make some guarantees that when you're asking for this thing, it's not going to change unless we coordinate that change amongst everybody else.
Okay.
So that we don't have some miscommunication.
Totally. And that must be pretty good for things like concurrency.
Yeah.
And reliability.
Absolutely. Definitely helps solve that problem, right? The concurrency story is much, much bigger than just that, mm-hmm. but it really does help a lot. And there's a lot of built-in coordination. There's an STM construct inside of Clojure that helps you do more of the controlled and coordinated mutations amongst multiple resources.
Excellent, man. So. Yeah, we had Rich Hickey on Channel 9 not too long ago with Eric Meyer, and
yeah.
they were kind of talking about Datomic.
Yeah.
Or Datomic, excuse me, Rich. Which he wrote in Clojure.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
It's a very interesting model for database, for sure.
Absolutely. I actually, I used to work at Relevance, who's kind of the partner at Datomic, and I actually got us some sneak peeks while it was being built. So it was great to kind of understand that perspective and really see what Clojure's core values were kind of translate out into Datomic.
Okay.
Right, just taking that solid foundation, it really was interesting to see it take shape.
Cool. Now, you're speaking here at Yao, obviously. Mm-hmm. You're talking about Clojure specifically.
I am, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your talk.
So the talk is called Ready, Set, Clojure. The idea is to intro the language mm-hmm. from the aspect of solving a problem, right? It's a narrative. I find that when I'm learning a new language, I need something to hang on to, something to attach to. Okay. I can read a book, I can learn the syntax, but I can't really learn the language until I sit down and have some kind of problem to solve. Mm. I can make up a problem and solve the same thing over and over again, but I try to make something practical, something I'd really want to use. And in this case, this talk models building an adapter for Redis. Mm. So it's a simple problem, right? It's just a TCP connection with some strings back and forth.
Okay.
So the problem we actually have to solve is quite simple. And then it builds onto abstracting ideas and actually turning it into macros, right? Mm. To kind of define the adapter, because there's 144 commands in Redis, and rather than writing 144 functions, we write a macro that takes in data and produces those functions for us.
Nice, nice. So. And Clojure helps you do this, you know, tell that story in what way?
So it's really about abstraction and the macro system. Brings you that ultimate power to create the abstraction, right? So it's the little pieces, understanding polymorphism, understanding the test framework that's built in, understanding basic construct of the language, and building an idea, but then really, really kind of hitting home that idea that having a language with a very small syntax kind of frees you and lets you express things in any way you want. And having that kind of code as data idea, the homogenicity and Clojure, it gets you much, much closer to being able to really create your own language inside of your program.
Interesting. And so what are the people who are in the audience, how do they feel about this?
It's been great reaction so far.
Yeah.
Have had some people kind of on the verge trying to figure it out, and this kind of kicked them over the edge and they really wanted to explore. Mm. The talk comes with code examples to kind of carry on. I purposely, at the end, leave the problem unsolved.
Cool.
And say, here's your call to action. I gave you something to attach to, right? I gave you that problem to solve. So
great.
Hopefully people pick it up. I've seen people fork it and watch it on GitHub already.
Nice.
So I know that people are starting to actually interact with it, which is great.
Yeah.
And hopefully the questions will come in and those kind of things too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And of course, people who are watching this can watch your talk since they've all been filmed.
Sure.
And so you should do that and learn
Absolutely.
More. So, Clojure is a relatively new language.
Yeah.
And what are some of its, it's not a perfect language.
No, not at all.
So what, when you come at it from the world you came from, say C, for example, I mean, take us through like going into a Lispy world when you don't come from one.
Yeah, so I think there's two big kind of things to get over, two big hurdles to overcome. Mm-hmm. One is the functional programming idea, right? That could be any functional language.
Yeah.
I actually find that Haskell's a wonderful language as well to learn functional programming. Mm-hmm. It really enforces that. It kind of makes you learn functional programming.
Yeah.
you can still program in a very imperative style and closure and actually get away with it. Haskell won't let you do that. The other is just the Lisp indoctrination in general, right? Mm-hmm. Lisp has a long, long history, of course. Mm-hmm. But that style of thinking is different. The style of thinking, I think, is captured very well in SICP, the Structured Interpretation of Computer Programs. Course from a while back from MIT, but a great book, right? Mm-hmm. Wonderful book that kind of walks you through that idea of really capturing, abstracting data and building code around it.
Cool. Now, from my relatively small experience with Lisps, is it very still heavy on parentheses?
You're going to have the same idea, right? It's still parentheses. It's about the same number. They're just in a different place. We're just going to move them to the outside.
Okay.
Closure actually has fewer required parentheses than, say, Scheme or Common Lisp or any of the other incantations of Lisp.
Okay.
So it does try to cut down on that a little bit. They're not exactly needed. So it's kind of cut away some.
Cool. So just to, Groupon, tell me a little bit about Groupon. You guys do what?
So the real goal of Groupon is capturing local commerce. Mm. There's a very large amount of money that's spent within a 10-mile radius of somebody's house. Mm. A lot of people traditionally think of us as just a coupon company, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not true. We do a lot of, we have payment systems, we have lots of other ideas that we're exploring on top of the kind of the traditional daily deal model.
Okay.
The instant redemption deals, things like that. Our payments platforms have been really great for restaurants. We have a mobile terminal for, let's say, food trucks or just anybody who's, trying to become a vendor or merchant. Allow them to take credit cards. And really, it's that idea of enabling local commerce and able to function more efficiently, faster, really capture the consumer relationship and help grow that.
Okay.
And I think we can do that with technology, right? There's such a gap in kind of that local commerce and technology area, right? It's the smaller stores that don't have the ability to do as much work in technology as they maybe would like.
Hmm.
And we help kind of take that, and we have a captive audience, and we help kind of produce additional traffic there.
Cool.
So
you guys have client applications across the mobile spectrum?
Yeah, we have iOS and Android and mm-hmm. Windows Mobile, the traditional mobile markets we've captured.
Okay.
And a lot of our payments products are all iPhone and iPad and Android-based.
Okay.
So we're really trying to push the mobile platform as our preferred platform for delivering content.
Which makes sense.
Because
you could essentially be like, if you're, say, visiting Palo Alto and you don't live there, it would be nice to get little, information. But hey, right over there, I'm not a shopper, but I assume that it makes sense.
Yeah, if you want to, maybe you want to go out to eat. You want to know, hey, what's around? You may not know what there is, but you can look up the reviews on Yelp, but you can look up the reviews on Groupon, you can look up who's offering a deal. I mean, here in Sydney, actually, I was looking, my wife is here with me, she wanted to find something to do, and pulled up Groupon and then looked and see, hey, what's going on? Maybe there's some outdoor adventures that were half price or something like that.
So you can
use Groupon here in Sydney.
Yeah, so. And you need that half price for walking over the bridge.
That's right,
it's pretty expensive.
It is.
Very cool, though. Now, so on the client, in some sense, if I have, you utilize like GPS and whatnot, and will automatically inform me of, is there a way for me to say, I'm typically interested in this type of thing, and you then store that information, and then when this type of thing is around me, you alert me? Is that
not yet?
Okay.
That's not currently supported.
Okay.
I don't know what the exact plan is for that.
Sure, that's fine.
We've talked about it.
Yeah.
But there is a way to tell us, here's the things I like.
Yeah.
So next time you ask us for information, we're going to try to cater that and produce those as kind of the top results, right? You always get the same result everybody else does, but they might be ordered differently. And that's really about your interaction with Groupon and telling us what you like and what you don't like.
Sure. Yeah, there'd be some interesting opportunities with NFC. If you touched your device to some...
Yeah.
There's a future is very interesting.
Very much so. We have some really great folks on our mobile team,
writing
the books on mobile development, coming from mobile companies, really kind of pushing the boundary of what the mobile platform is and what it means. And you know, there we have a very large amount of traffic that comes to Groupon through the mobile interfaces.
I bet. So the bulk of your developers, are they web developers, JavaScript?
You know, we have a scattering of people. So, you know, we have a pretty large infrastructure where we serve a lot of requests throughout the world. And so we have systems people, we have infrastructure folks, we have, you know, folks doing purely web-based things. Michael Fakir, who's also here talking at Yao, he's on my security team, but he also rewrote the CoffeeScript compiler.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we have working in those, he's working in the security space with me, but also helping do client-side security.
Great.
Now that he's written the compiler, we can write additional tools to help.
Okay.
Static analysis type tools. So,
nice.
You know, we have that kind of focus as well, and then kind of everywhere in between.
Right.
So you really have kind of a home solving lots of different problems, and like other companies that have this much volume, this much demand, you get to solve problems that haven't been solved yet. You know, you can't go to Stack Overflow and find out how to deal with 2 billion requests in a week or something. You know, I'm throwing out arbitrary numbers here, right?
Of course.
But you know, those problems are hard to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to actually, you know, spend time really thinking about them. So it's great to be able to be in a place where you can find a home in kind of any area of development and really kind of dig in.
That's cool. That's great. And, you know, judging by you and Michael, I'm assuming it's a relatively young place in terms of the...
It is fairly young. You know, Groupon started out as a traditional startup company. It's well past that at this point. You know, we've
sure.
got public.
But I mean, like, age-wise.
Yeah. But, you know, they kind of carried along that traditional... spirit of the younger generation.
Yeah.
I might be a little older than you think,
sure.
It is traditionally a younger company.
Yeah.
We definitely have a very mixed variety of folks. But
yeah, I mean, the GitHub people who are also here, and hopefully, you know, maybe we'll be able to talk to them as well, but they have quite an interesting culture of very young people and like sort of organized chaos, and they're doing just amazing things.
Yeah, so. They are.
That's very cool. So I'm sure Groupon is essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
So where can folks, so if you want to learn about Clojure, what, you just go and download the
Clojure.org.
Source code?
Clojure.org is the place. The source code, it's actually a very small language.
Okay.
You can find quite a bit out by just reading the source code.
Okay.
Of course, there are books too. I wrote a book that was published in April called Clojure, or Programming Clojure.
Cool.
By the Pragmatic Programmers. There's also another book called Clojure Programming on the O'Reilly bookshelf. And they're both kind of the traditional kind of introduction, take you through the tour of the language style books. And there's kind of a more timeless book called The Joy of Clojure, which is a really wonderful dive into language.
Okay.
Exploring the deep corners and different pieces you might not have hit on just writing code day to day.
Sure. So, and you mentioned that, you know, you get sort of controllable mutability out of the box.
Yeah.
What else does it offer you? I mean, in some sense, you mentioned it's sort of functional, so functions or values, and you know,
The data structures are also functions, right?
Okay.
Functional data structures, persistent data structures.
Okay.
You get a surprising amount of performance. You know, in a lot of cases, you can get the same performance as you can out of writing just Java code. So there's ways of kind of eking out that extra mile when you need to.
Wow.
And as Martin has showed us in this talk, you can get a lot out of Java.
Yeah.
When you want to by thinking about it the right way and modeling things in the right way.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's evolved quite nicely, the set of libraries around it, but you get all of the Java resources as well, right? It's full interop with the host platform. So all those libraries that exist, you can take advantage of. So
really?
Yeah, I mean, any Java library out there, you can just pull it in and use it. And you can turn around and actually use the Clojure code from inside of Java. We're all speaking interfaces, so as long as we define those interfaces as clear boundaries, we can talk to them.
So in the case where you're interoperating with Java, let's say you're using a library where there has no notion of mutability by default for the types that it's going to give you.
Yeah. So you know, you can either just, you know, go with that, run with it, which in some cases is fine.
Okay.
Or you can suck them in and kind of use the Clojure abstractions and then treat them that
Understood.
Way as well.
Very
so yeah, I mean, really up to you. You could also choose. You know, sometimes just bashing on a mutable array is faster, right? So you might say you might construct. You know, or call on this mutable Java object inside of a, you know, a Clojure or a tight scope, right? Your mutation only happens in one small place and it doesn't affect the rest of the world.
Yeah.
It's okay, right? No problem.
Yeah.
And Clojure has that that idea and the notion of transience as well. You can kind of construct that fast little mutable thing if you want to just, you know, in a nice controlled environment, bash on something mutable.
Nice.
So.
Bash on something mutable.
Yeah.
Nice. Give you a t-shirt.
Right? There you go. Perfect.
Right on. Well, hey, thanks for coming on Channel
Absolutely.
9. Great to talk to you, and you guys do great things at Groupon.
Thanks.
Keep on pushing the limits, man.
Great. Thanks.
Cheers.